Hi, everyone, and welcome back to this month's installment of Therapists in the Wild. We are a podcast about applying dialectical behavior therapy skills in all of our daily lives.
Yes, and we hope you enjoyed our episode last month with Chris Jones, a mental health advocate, who was sharing with us his experience living with borderline personality disorder and also his experience incorporating DBT into his daily life. So this was one of our favorite episodes to record. So if you missed it, we highly recommend that you go back and check it out. Just a few housekeeping things before we get into it today. As a reminder, we have a new website, which is therapistsinthewild.com. And on our website, you can check us out. We talk about some of the consultation services that we're offering for therapists, as well as professionals in related fields who are interested in getting some consultation around their clinical work. And we also have a resources page on our website where we list some DBT resources for anyone who is interested. So check that out when you get a chance.
Yeah. And one thing that Molly and I just talked about adding to our website, was a little hard for us to ask for money, to be honest. And we are going to model DBT skills use and use opposite action to ask anyway. We would be so grateful if you might consider supporting our work through using our Venmo account, which is at Molly St. Denis. That's at MollySTDenis. So you can find Molly's name through Venmo. You can also go to our website, therapistsinthewild.com, and find a link to that Venmo page and donating whatever amount you feel comfortable with. You could do it once, you could do it more than once, whatever, you know, whatever works for you and whatever you feel good about. No amount is too small, certainly. And, you know, the reason we're asking for you to donate or you to consider donating is that it just takes so much work to do this podcast. We love it and it takes work. And especially now that our daily lives are luckily less impacted by the pandemic, you know, we just have a little bit less time than we did at the beginning. And so it's just getting harder. And that would make a meaningful difference. And we also are trying to not do advertisements for that reason. We're trying to just keep the podcast cohesive. So please think about it. We would be so grateful. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yes. Anything that you feel comfortable contributing, we would really appreciate. And if you're not in a place to do that right now, but you still want to support the podcasts, please write us a review on Apple Podcasts. We always love hearing your feedback. And it's also helpful to allow new listeners to get to know us a little bit better, trust us, and give our podcast a listen.
Okay, so let's get into our topic for the month, which is using DBT skills to more effectively respond to feedback.
And we wanted to do this episode because we have personally found that feedback is difficult to sometimes respond to effectively. It sometimes brings up a lot of uncomfortable emotions, whether it's feedback from friends, family, you know, work people in the workplace, whoever it is, it can be hard to hear. And DBT has really, really helped us with this. So we wanted to share what we've learned.
Yeah, I think we probably mentioned this in the early days of the podcast that one of the main reasons we wanted to do this in the first place is that we call each other essentially for DBT skills coaching all the time. And so we wanted a platform to share that, share those conversations. And I think, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, Molly, I feel like one of the most frequent times we call each other is when one of us has received feedback that we perceive as negative, that we have a hard time knowing what to do about. I feel like we just talk about this all the time together. And so, you know, we wanted to bring it to the podcast.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like there hasn't been many times throughout the past few years that I haven't called you after receiving feedback that was hard to hear. And It's really helpful to talk out and figure out kind of like, checking the facts a little bit, figuring out what skills might be helpful to use in the moment, and trying to figure out a way to ultimately benefit from the feedback and respond effectively.
Yeah. And as therapists, you know, as therapists who have now finished graduate school, I mean, it's been such a big part of our growth is getting pretty direct feedback. So it is something that I think we both really have grown a lot in and are still working toward every single day. So yeah, it's been a really big part of our lives for the past couple of years.
Yeah. It was interesting because I recently got feedback on my taking feedback from a supervisor who said that I took feedback really well. And it was, really, thank you. It felt really good to hear her say that because I've worked hard to try to respond to feedback effectively. And it wasn't always that way for me. And like, you know, I was thinking back and preparing for this episode about what it has been like for me over the years, getting feedback and how I've responded to it. And maybe the least effective times that I have responded to feedback is when it comes to athletics. I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, I am not the most athletic. And when I try to play tennis with my husband, who loves to play and always wants, you know, he wants to play with me, but I'm not very skilled.
I like that non-judgmental language.
Thank you. And we've tried to play before, and then he'll kind of be like, oh, you know, move your hand up the racket, or, you know, go to the middle of the court, or whatever feedback. And I don't like hearing it. Mm-hmm. And I get defensive, and I'm like, oh, like, we don't have to be so competitive about it. Why can't we just like hit, you know? And it really brings me back to feeling like how I used to feel in like middle school when I was angsty and in gym class and just kind of like miserable, like, don't want to hear this feedback, you know? But
yeah, and it probably, I mean, I'm thinking too, I also was not the most skilled athlete as a child. And I think this is such an example of how sometimes even the best intention, even feedback given with the best of intentions, can really just quickly like bring up intense emotions, mm-hmm. even if it's not about that situation. Like we've almost been conditioned to like feel really ashamed really quickly because almost like our inner child is coming out, you know?
Right. Even when it's kind of coming from a place of like, yeah, I can see these specific, you know, things that you're doing that could be improved, and here's how you could improve them. It's not, you know, it's something that you could, that you are capable of doing. And then we would be able to enjoy playing this together. Mm-hmm. But obviously emotionally it's more complicated than that.
Yep. Yep. Great example. I can certainly relate to it. So many times I've gotten feedback throughout my life that have been difficult to respond to. One that comes to mind, I think, you know, something you said about being a kid reminded me of this. I have this very specific memory of being in high school and working really, really hard on a draft of my personal statement for my college applications. And it's something I had, you know, thought about for months, and I had it as an assignment for English class. And, you know, writing a personal essay is personal. And I was really pretty proud of it. And my teacher just ripped me apart.
Oh, that is so rough.
And it was really difficult. And I think we'll get into why it was so difficult in a moment. And on the other side of the dialectic, I have her to thank for the fact that I did not submit that college essay because it was not my best work, you know, and sometimes it takes negative feedback to make effective life decisions. So in hindsight, I'm happy about it. And it just was so, it just felt so bad. And I don't know, it kind of makes me think like, what can we just talk about why, you know, why from an emotional standpoint, a cognitive standpoint, like what is it about getting quote unquote negative feedback? And I say it in quotes because sometimes it actually, you know, is a comment on your performance that someone wishes were different. It also might just be that you interpreted it negatively. So like what about it? Why is it so hard for so many of us?
I think shame has a lot to do with it. I think that's, I mean, I know for myself, and I think probably for probably a lot of people listening to this podcast, you know, like when someone comments on your behavior or something that you could change about your behavior, particularly when it's something that you are already insecure about, it can activate core beliefs or beliefs that you hold really strongly and deeply about yourself, which might have been developed in childhood. So if I hold a core belief that I'm inadequate or not good enough, and then somebody comments on a behavior that I could change, I might interpret that through the lens of, okay, well, here's just one more example of how I'm not good enough, which would lead to feelings of shame, of course, rather than interpreting that through the lens of, I'm worthy, and this is helpful feedback that I can continue to grow from, which would lead to a lot more openness to hearing that feedback, willingness to hear it, and probably a lot less shame. So even if the feedback is on one specific behavior that you could change, if your mind is interpreting that as, well, I'm just not good enough, then you're going to become flooded with shame.
Yeah, so it sounds like what you're saying is that hearing feedback that's hard to hear, like quickly brings up shame, quickly leads to emotion mind, which I know happens to me. And then all of a sudden, like for the next however long, doesn't matter what happens, it's just being flooded with those thoughts that emotion mind can bring about. And it's really hard to be skillful in that moment because the shame is so strong. Maybe the guilt is so strong if it's feedback about something that you did.
Right. And all those different emotions would bring up different urges too. Like if shame is the emotion that's coming up, I could imagine the urge to be like, you know, how can I get this person to stop giving me feedback? To kind of like hide from it, shield yourself if you can.
The urge might also be to defend yourself, right? To deny, to explain really quickly why you did something or why you didn't do something. Ignore, as you said, kind of hide from the person.
Or even like avoid trying to get feedback in the future, like, you know, like trying to do what you can to not encounter that person or not put yourself in a situation that might lead to feedback again. Other emotions that you can think of that might come up for people around getting negative feedback, or do we feel like it's mostly kind of like the shame, guilt, potentially?
Yeah, embarrassment. I mean, all kind of related. Embarrassment. I definitely think anger can come up. And why, if I were to venture to guess, I would imagine that it's really anger as a secondary emotion, like we've talked about, which is masking the primary emotion of shame or guilt. And it can look like anger for a lot of people. And then the urge might be to, you know, yell, attack, which I think we all know isn't probably the most effective.
Right. Yeah. Like if somebody says you could have done X, Y, Z better, then you might want to say like, well, you don't do a great job yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about microaggressions and how, you know, when people are called out for microaggressing against someone else and it's brought to their attention, you know, the urge might be to like either really quickly defend yourself or get angry and say, that's not what I did or that's not what I meant. And, you know, while those feelings of while those primary emotions of guilt and shame kind of being expressed as anger might be understandable, obviously that's not effective for the relationship, for the other person's experience at all.
And I think that that's a great example of why mindfulness is such a big part of this too, of like being able to recognize when that shame is arising within you, to be able to notice like, oh, I'm noticing a feeling of shame rising. I'm noticing the urge to defend myself, like to have that space to be able to observe those urges and those feelings before acting on them would probably be very helpful in that type of a situation, to allow you to give you a couple more seconds to think about how you really do want to respond.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. I mean, we'll get into this more throughout the episode, how to respond more skillfully. I think this particular example is really one to just, you know, be in the moment awareness of those urges in order to prevent, you know, a potentially very ineffective action when you microaggress against someone is hugely important. And I think kind of like admitting to yourself your pattern of accepting feedback. And if you are someone who tends to get really defensive, if you are someone who tends to get angry, knowing that about yourself so that you can know to be really skillful in those situations.
Something I find too is that, and actually I was talking to a client about this recently, that sometimes it can be actually uncomfortable to get positive feedback or like compliments, which is kind of counterintuitive. But I think sometimes like shame can actually come up in those situations too, if you don't feel, maybe if you don't like feel deserving of the compliment, or you might think the person only gave me that compliment because they feel bad for me. Or, you know, or you can find the criticism like buried within the compliment, like your mind will, you know, play tricks on you and try to do so. You know, I think shame can really come up and it can be uncomfortable sometimes even to receive positive feedback.
Maybe based on your learning history, you've had experiences with positive feedback that really didn't work out that well. And so you've kind of been conditioned to respond with feelings of shame rather than a more positive emotion.
Right. It's kind of like self-protective almost. If I don't let myself feel good about myself, then I won't have to feel bad about myself when the next thing inevitably happens.
Huh. I really like that way of describing it because I know a lot of people really struggle to receive positive feedback. I kind of want to share an example. Sometimes we pull back the curtain on the podcast, and I think this is one of those times because it's an experience that you and I really learned from. And I think that it might be helpful to share with our listeners.
I think I know what you're going to say.
I just thought of it. It's related to when we started promoting our podcast. When we first released it, we were kind of grow our audience. We had the idea to do an Ask Me Anything on Reddit as a way to get our name out there. And of course, neither of us had ever, I don't think I had ever been on Reddit before.
I had been on Reddit before, but I never posted on Reddit. I was more just like, you know, reading things and, but yeah, both of us were for the most part, pretty much noobs when it came to Reddit.
Yeah. Good way of phrasing it.
Technical term.
Anyway, so we, you know, the whole thing was exciting and overwhelming, and we ended up getting some comments that, you know, kind of commenting on the fact that we had done such a short AMA session. I don't know if that's even the right phrase. You know, I think because we got so flooded with comments, it was unexpected. And so we just got kind of overwhelmed and we shut it down maybe quicker than we could have. And we got these comments kind of wishing that we hadn't done that. And I think our first reaction was to get pretty self-defensive because we obviously experienced some shame and that came out as anger. I think we were kind of like, we're doing, you know, we're just trying to spread DBT. Like, why are people listening to us like this? And the truth is, you know, it is true that commenters on the internet don't always deliver feedback in maybe the most effective way, it is also true that there was some truth to their comments. You know, I think we learned. We didn't really know how to do an AMA. And I think if we were going to do it again, we would do it differently. And so the feedback was necessary, even though maybe we didn't love how it was delivered, you know, we grew from it, I think.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. The other thing, just to add to that, is that I would say like 95% of the comments were positive. You know, for the most part, people were grateful. We did the AMA. We answered a lot of people's questions. People asked really interesting questions. Very thoughtful. Yeah. And like, you know, it challenged us. And so for the most part, it was, the feedback was positive. But of course, getting a couple, you know, critical comments is what our minds wanted to kind of focus in on and zoom in on and react to. So I just point that out because I think that's probably something with feedback that comes up a lot where, like, you know, someone might say like, oh my gosh, you did such a great presentation. You know, I loved X, Y, and Z. And maybe next time you could just, you know, look around the room a little bit more. And then you go home and ruminate about, oh, I did a terrible job. I ruined that presentation. No one heard, you know, no one, I didn't teach anyone anything. Like, you know, so just trying to be aware of that distortion of kind of just paying attention to the critical feedback as opposed to the positive feedback.
Such a good point. Our brains have a bias toward the negative, even if it's only a minor, you know, fraction of the feedback we receive. And so being aware of that is really important as a way to check the facts, you know, as a way to remind yourself later, oh no, actually I got overwhelmingly positive feedback. It was just this one thing that I could work on, you know?
Exactly.
We've discussed how feedback can be hard to receive. And we've hinted at the fact that it can be really helpful in terms of growth and development. You know, there are certain types of relationships that are so open where people do give each other more direct feedback. And I think those tend to be the relationships that survive, you know, the longest. Two people can grow, two people can work on things that they may have done that has hurt the other person rather than have resentment build up over time. Like, feedback is necessary. It's not just helpful and important. It's necessary, I think, for a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's kind of like in romantic relationships, it's often a lot easier to give that type of feedback because there's a sense of security. There can be a sense of security, not always, but that, you know, I can kind of tell my partner to, you know, that they leave a mess in the kitchen all the time and they need to do the dishes more often. That's easier sometimes to say to a partner than to a roommate. Yeah, I think that's a good point. The relationships that you are able to give that feedback more openly are sometimes the more intimate relationships in our lives. And as you alluded to earlier in the episode too, as therapists, you know, we get a lot of feedback that can feel personal sometimes, whether it's from clients or supervisors, because as a therapist, like, sometimes the feedback is on how you relate to other people, how you interact with other people. And it, you know, it can be hard to hear, and it's very, very necessary to become a skillful clinician. So maybe we could talk a little bit about how we've grown from some of the feedback that we've gotten professionally.
Yeah, I mean, therapy is definitely a field where you get more personal feedback than perhaps other professions. And so it's kind of an exposure. And we know that exposure works, you know, and I feel like in the very beginning when I would get feedback on my, you know, interpersonal style or something that felt really personal to me and my identity, it felt so painful. And then over time, I don't know, I guess I kind of learned to stop avoiding that. Like, I learned that, okay, so maybe I'll get some feedback that will be painful, and then I will be in pain, and I will not be in pain forever. You know, it will pass. And I think once I've had those experiences a few times, I learned, okay, well, so if I was in pain for a little while and then the pain passed, I know I can get through that again. And so I don't need to avoid getting feedback because I know I can make it. And actually, I've grown from this tremendously. It was a net positive experience, even if it was really hard in the moment.
Yeah. So you've over time become willing to experience that discomfort because it ultimately is really, it sounds like a values thing of ultimately it's in line with your values to put yourself in positions where you do receive feedback and grow. Growing as a therapist sounds like a value of yours. So, and because of that, you're willing to feel that discomfort, even if it really sometimes sucks for a period of time, you know, and then ultimately, as all emotions do, it passes.
I'm smiling. You can't see me, audience, but I'm smiling because this is, I think, the thing that Molly and I say to each other more than anything else when we are coaching each other after difficult feedback. You know, we will say to each other, okay, well, why did you get into this field? Because you want to be a therapist, because you want to be the best therapist you can possibly be. because you want to work with people. And so how are you going to do that if you don't get painful feedback and grow from it? And so I think thinking about how it's in line with your values to be experiencing discomfort is one of the most helpful things I think that you and I have learned in this realm.
I totally agree. And I feel like the feedback that I've gotten as a therapist, like from supervisors, has also kind of generalized to other areas of my life. It's, you know, I found that what I get feedback on professionally is usually, at least if it's from supervision, this is a judgment, but good supervision, then I feel like the feedback that I get is on things in my life that I could improve on both personally and professionally.
Is there an example you could share?
Sure. Like being a bit more assertive sometimes is feedback that I've gotten from supervisors. You know, if somebody might be kind of ruminating out loud, you know, talking about something that's kind of on their mind, but maybe in a way that's not so productive, being a little quicker to jump in and redirect the conversation, as opposed to kind of just letting it go on and waiting until there's a pause and then coming in, because, you know, sometimes that wastes precious time in session, and, you know, and I want to help people, and it's sometimes not as helpful to let that go on. So it is my job as a therapist to kind of have some control over the session and be able to redirect it when it would be effective to do so. But that's certainly something that I'm working on as a therapist and as a person, you know, outside of my work.
That's a great example.
Yeah, I think both of us, it seems like we've both grown from feedback, and it's helped us build a sense of mastery and confidence, really, from, you know, taking feedback, being able to grow from it, seeing the benefits of it, being able to trust that you can handle uncomfortable emotions, like all of that builds a sense of mastery too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about the expression that I think some people can feel a little bit invalidated by. I know I certainly have in the past. And I think it's true, which is just this idea of growing a thicker skin. Mm. And it's painful to grow skin. It's a weird visual. But right, it's, I mean, growth is painful. And what happens over time is you grow a thicker skin when you get more comfortable with discomfort. And so, but first you need to be open to the experience, you know, first you need to be open to getting the feedback, to not shut it down, to not get extremely defensive and angry, and to actually be able to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how can you be able to hear it? Like, let's talk now maybe about some ways to respond when you do get feedback.
Okay. I mean, the first thing I'm thinking about is, I think I've shared on this podcast before that I did theater growing up. And I would say if there's one thing that I remember from those many years of acting and, you know, performing on the stage from my directors, it was just simply three words, take the note. Hmm. Like, just take the note. And it was their way of, I think, teaching us to be professional. It was their way of teaching us to be non-defensive. And it was just like every director would say that in every show I was in. I'm going to give you notes at the end of the run. You take it, you say thank you, and you move on.
I love that. Take the note. That's great. Is that something that kind of like sticks in your mind now when you...
Oh, I think about it all the time. I mean, I think about it on a daily basis, basically. And it, I mean, you know, getting feedback is still hard and has been hard, as I've mentioned. And I think it, when I think about take the note, I mean, first of all, it just kind of gives me some distance from the situation. It kind of makes me laugh, makes me smile, you know? And it just kind of reminds me, like, you don't have to take everything super personally, you know, it's not always about you, and you just kind of need to appreciate the person's feedback and move on.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's similar to take the note. My sister used to work for a company, and they had somebody come in and train the employees on how to receive feedback, actually.
Ooh.
Which is great. training. And the main thing that, because I asked her, like, what did they teach you? And she basically said, they just said to say, thank you. Mm-hmm. Just say thank you. And then if you want to go home and you want to cry when you get home or call your friends and complain about it or, you know, journal about it or whatever reaction you want to have, just kind of deal with it privately later. But in the moment, just respond gracefully, say thank you and move on.
I love that. And I think it's worth talking about why, because I would imagine that some people listening might be thinking like, well, what if it's really mean spirited feedback or really ineffective feedback? And we'll get to that in a moment. Because yes, of course that happens. I think though, for the most part, what we're talking about is, you know, mostly there's a reason why someone is giving feedback. Maybe it was hard for them to do, you know, maybe it's in a friendship or a romantic relationship and it's really something that has been on their mind, that's been weighing on them. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't be bringing it up unless it was important. Or maybe it's a situation, you know, at work where it's just necessary for things to run smoothly or something. Like usually there is, or always, I guess, there is a reason behind it. And so if you can respond as effectively as possible, it validates that person's reason for bringing it up in the first place.
It's kind of like finding the kernel of truth, you know, in the feedback. Like there is a reason, even if I don't agree with all of this feedback, or even if I don't love the way it was delivered, there's something about it that makes sense. And so trying to remember that seems like a helpful thing to kind of keep in mind, and also to be aware that it might not have been easy for the person to say what they said to you, and that they did that because they care about giving you feedback for some reason. You know, I was listening to a clip from the Glennon Doyle's podcast, We Can Do Hard Things, today. And her partner, I think her name is Abby, was on the podcast, and she's a professional athlete. And she was talking about how, you know, when your coach is still giving you feedback and coaching you, then that means that they care. Yeah. So getting feedback is actually a sign that somebody cares about you. Whereas if your coach stops coaching you, like that's when you should get nervous.
I love that. So it's like, if someone is giving you feedback, it probably means that they want to stay in and work on the relationship rather than abandoning it altogether.
Right.
In the example of the microaggression, you know, that we gave earlier, like a lot of times when people have been microaggressed against, they don't want to give feedback, and they feel so, you know, they might feel so hurt that they point it out.
Right. Yeah. It could be the other person trying to, you know, assert their self-respect. Yes. Or to assert a boundary or something like that, that they want you to hear and want you to respect.
Maybe we could talk about some DBT skills. You know, we've been mentioning them, we've been alluding to them. And I think there are very specific DBT skills that can be used to respond to feedback more effectively. And, you know, I think what we've kind of been saying is that if you ignore the helpful parts of feedback, you're kind of only hurting yourself. And so maybe you can think about it from that perspective, like how do I use DBT skills to grow from this experience?
Mm-hmm. So I feel like there was a skill embedded in what you even just said, which is the effectiveness skill, which we've been kind of referring to throughout the episode, but it is effective to take something from feedback that you're given most of the time, not all the time. Sometimes feedback is just, you disagree with it and it's, you know, not something that you necessarily want to incorporate into your life or respond effectively to if it was given really ineffectively. But for the most part, kind of effectiveness seems like a big one to focus on here.
Yeah, I love that. And I think so the effectiveness skill is part of mindfulness, and that is the main thing to do well when you are in the moment, when you are being given the feedback, right? So just to kind of notice what's happening, notice internal sensations, Notice thoughts, notice those urges that we talked about, the urge to defend, the urge to yell, the urge to walk away, right? Use those observe and describe skills to just stay in the moment and really listen to what the other person is saying so that you can then determine like what is it, what response would be effective here. I've been in situations where I've, you know, received feedback that's really hard to hear. And now that I've learned mindfulness skills, I have literally, in order to stay in the moment, like observed and described in my own mind what the person's, how the person's face is moving, like if there's a red pen on my desk, what it looks like just those kind of simple grounding techniques to keep yourself in the experience when it's really difficult, rather than, you know, to withdraw or yell or something like that.
So using those observe and describe skills, not only for what's going on inside you, but mm-hmm. also for what's happening outside of you, so yeah. that you can stay anchored to the present moment.
So yeah, so we talked about really staying in the moment, potentially using opposite action to, you know, take the note or say thank you, as we referenced earlier. Maybe you don't respond right away, right? You just kind of leave, calm down, get into wise mind, and then respond.
Also using check the facts to explore whether your interpretation of the feedback is accurate or might have been distorted or exaggerated in some way. So I know we were talking earlier about how sometimes feedback can feel all or nothing. So even feedback on a specific behavior can be interpreted as I'm not good enough or I'm not worthy, rather than I am good enough and I can continue to work on improving this one aspect of my behavior. So checking the facts can help with highlighting whether your interpretation truly does fit the facts of what was said, which would influence what an effective response might look like.
Yeah, it's so important when choosing how to respond. And I think another reason why the number one skill here is to pause, you know, to use like the DBT stop skill, and to just kind of take a beat before responding, because exactly as you said, like you might kind of be off in your interpretation because of things that are totally valid, you know, experiences that you've had in the past, with other types of feedback that, you know, were a lot more difficult, or, you know, whatever the case may be, or maybe you're a more emotionally sensitive person and the other person didn't quite anticipate how you would respond. Like there could be all sorts of things that, you know, impact the way that you hear things. And so it's just really important to keep that in mind. And it's, I think it's kind of another plug for not responding impulsively.
Right. Like that, I think the learning history piece is a big, big part of it. Like, you know, we all have certain sensitivities or kind of like sore spots based on childhood experiences earlier in life, you know, that kind of trigger us when somebody pokes at that. If there are specific sensitivities or specific things that if somebody says to you, if somebody blames you unfairly for something, and that's something that happened to you a lot when you were a kid, that might be the type of thing that you might be more likely to have a general and negative interpretation about if you're given feedback about that.
Okay, so we talked about some overarching skills that can be used. There are certainly others too. Why don't we maybe go through some examples of, you know, friends giving each other feedback, bosses giving each other feedback. We can, I don't know, maybe we can do role play for some of them and just talk about what DBT skills to use in different situations.
That sounds great.
Okay.
Start. I can be the person receiving feedback.
Okay. Let's start with like a friend giving feedback to another friend. So, hi, Molly. So, you know, I just wanted to say I sent you a text last weekend to let you know I was having a hard time. You didn't respond. It kind of hurt my feelings. You know, this is not the first time this has happened recently. And I don't know, it kind of makes me feel like maybe you're here for the good times and not the bad times. What's going on?
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for telling me. I'm sure that was not easy for you to say to me. And I'm really sorry that you were struggling last weekend and that I wasn't there for you when you needed me to be. If it's helpful to hear at all, I was taking care of my grandparents at the hospital last weekend. And at the same time, I hear you saying that it's not just this one time you've been feeling like this. So I'm sorry. I really want to hear about how you're doing. Maybe we can spend some time this weekend catching up. Are you free to hang out?
Wow, so non-defensive. I really liked how you I really liked how you both explained like why, that you didn't answer my text this weekend. It really didn't sound like you were being defensive though. It almost sounded like you were just trying to be helpful, like make me feel less hurt by telling me why you didn't respond. I think if you had said it in a certain tone of like, well, I was taking care of my grandparents at the hospital, then like I would feel really invalidated and like I didn't have a right to be hurt, But you just kind of stated the fact. You just told me what was going on and you really didn't get defensive. You still apologized. You clearly had listened to my feedback in order to say that. So yeah, tell me how that was for you and what skills you used, because I would imagine that took some skills.
Yes. So when you first said that to me, my instinct was to respond defensively, of course. I wanted to say, well, I was with my grandparents last weekend, so like, I'm not here to be available to you all the time. That's kind of how, the instinct to respond like that. But using that mindfulness, noticing that that was the urge, noticing that that was the feelings, and I did try to do the observe and describe skills to try to just kind of like really pay attention to what you were saying, the words that were coming out of your mouth, so I could really hear you. I think allowed me to respond in a way that probably felt like I captured or I could validate what you were saying because I really did hear you. And I was also careful to something we say a lot in DBT is to validate the valid. We don't have to validate everything that somebody says if it's not all valid, but there is usually some kernel of truth to what people say that can be validated and is valid. So, like for example, in this situation, I didn't necessarily validate my friend's desire for me to be available all the time. I did validate the fact that yeah, I tend to be less available in the bad times, and that's something that is not a great quality of mine. And that's something that they pointed out to me, and it's true, it's valid, it makes sense. And so communicating that, how did that feel to you to be on the receiving end of that?
Yeah, I felt very heard. I felt very validated. If I were in this situation, I think it would make me want to give feedback to friends in the future, because it was so positively reinforced, to friends in general, but specifically to you, right? And so I think it would make me value our relationship more and make me feel like you really cared and that you were working on it just like I was working on it by bringing this to you in the first place. And the fact that you thanked me for bringing it to you made me feel like you care about the relationship just like I do. So, yeah, it felt great.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, and then I think the last thing just to that I was trying to do is apologize for specific behaviors, not like, I'm sorry, I'm a shitty friend,
We'll do that all the
sorry, I just am really bad at my phone, but being really specific about like, I'm sorry that I wasn't there for you when you needed me.
I thinking about what you said about validating the valid and not the invalid, we said we were going to get to this. What if someone just gives you feedback in a way that is you find ineffective. I can think of an example, and it actually, I was telling Molly the story a couple of months ago, and this was really the impetus for this episode, actually. This was a memory of mine that happened several years ago where I had a higher up at work just please like just really kind of rip into me. I know that isn't very behaviorally specific, and That is how it felt. It just, you know, I really was just kind of attacked in a way that I didn't feel was fair. I didn't feel was valid for the most part. And, you know, it really is something that has stuck with me all these years later. And, you know, I actually was pretty proud of how I handled the situation, because I just kind of let the person finish what they were saying without jumping in. And I'm actually glad about that, even though it was really, really painful. I'm glad about that for a few reasons. First of all, I did learn some kernels of truth, you know, in their perspective, which of course I didn't really realize that until days later when I had kind of, you know, was far enough removed from the situation. So there were some things about it that were helpful. And also, you know, the person ended up apologizing because it was so ineffective. And I think that, you know, had I not given them the chance to finish, like, they might not have really realized that themselves. So there's sometimes a benefit. I mean, I'm sure lots of our listeners can come up with examples where that wasn't the case, you know, where they wish they had cut off the person sooner, and that's fine and fair. And I'm just speaking, you know, about this one example. I think I just really used my mindfulness skills. I remember kind of like looking around the room, picking a point to anchor my eyes to, like watching a clock tick or something, just like anything to get through this moment and wait till it was over. And in hindsight, you know, it was a professional situation, so I had to stay in the moment. I couldn't leave or risk, you know, looking unprofessional. As I said, the person was, you know, was my superior. And so I kind of felt like it was the most effective thing to do, to just stay. Yeah, it just sticks out in my mind as something that was really, really difficult. And I think sometimes even in the most ineffective feedback, there is still a kernel of truth.
I'm really glad you brought this example up, because it's hard enough to receive feedback that is delivered effectively. So to receive feedback in a professional situation, which, you know, brings another level of difficulty, and to have that be communicated in a way that feels personal or feels not very constructive or helpful in the moment, at least. It sounds like you were able to find some things later, you know, when you were reflecting that were helpful, but it just takes a lot of skills to be able to respond effectively in that situation. And what I'm really hearing you say is that you kind of responded the opposite of impulsively. Like, you use mindfulness skills to pretty much, you probably use also a lot of opposite action, I would imagine.
Yeah.
To not jump in, not interrupt, not defend, not attack, and instead listen, stay quiet, pause. And then, I mean, what did you end up actually like saying in response, if anything?
Yeah. I mean, also some distress tolerance skills, particularly afterward, but even in the moment, you know, just kind of, we always talk about how you can use distress tolerance skills kind of on the road and no one has to know that you're using them. So like, did some deep breathing, I'm pretty sure, some paced breathing. I think I drank some water, which isn't quite a distress tolerance skill, but it can be helpful. I think I just kind of said, you know, thank you for the feedback. I will keep that in mind. I think I may have said, you know, here's where I was coming from, on at least one of the points, because I thought that it might be helpful for the other person to hear. Yeah. And, you know, I'll try to work on that.
Mm-hmm. And you survived it. You're here today.
And I survived, and I'm here today. And, you know, yeah. And I don't want, you know, this to come across like you just need to take whatever people say to you, you know, and not stand up for yourself. I do think maybe we can talk in a moment about ways to assert your self-respect when that would be the effective thing to do. I think I just felt like in the moment there was really nothing to be gained by getting defensive and talk about how hurtful that was to hear. You know, because this was someone that I had an ongoing relationship with, and I could always do it later. You know, I could always, if the moment was right, I could the next week come back and say, like, hey, you know, I want to let you know that how you delivered that feedback was hurtful, even though it was, you know, there was some truth to it.
Right. Yeah. It was just, as you were talking, I was just thinking, like, sometimes in the moment, it's hard to do that, like, arithmetic to figure out, like, okay, is it better for me to assert myself and explain and defend? Because sometimes that is actually, you know, like you were saying, for your self-respect, that might be really how you want to respond. But sometimes it's hard to know in the moment when you're so shocked by someone delivering feedback in an ineffective way that you're kind of like a deer in headlights almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So to be able to just get through the moment, use your distress tolerance skills, use your mindfulness skills, survive the moment, and then later to know that you have that option to come back and still assert yourself if that's what you choose to do is comforting, I think.
Absolutely.
You don't have to respond immediately.
Great point.
So, yeah, and I think if somebody is giving you feedback that maybe you totally disagree with and you find to be ineffective and maybe not fair, and you do want to assert yourself, what are some thoughts that you have on like how somebody could do that in the moment if they can kind of do that math and figure that out in the moment?
Yeah, good point. And it's a big if. And maybe you can do it in the moment, or maybe you want to do it later after getting into Wise Mind, you know. I think saying something like, you know, appreciate your feedback, maybe validate the valid part. So, yep, I could have done this differently, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And then just kind of a quick explanation of your perspective so that you don't feel like you're being kind of trampled on, I think is really helpful. Like, there is a reason that I did this. Here's what it is. And okay, I hear your side too. And just kind of keep it brief.
I think that's great. Yeah, I agree. I think just kind of like, you know, acknowledging that the person is giving you feedback, maybe even validating like where they're coming from. If there's anything valid about it, like, you know, I can tell that this is something that really bothered you. Whatever you can find to validate, or like you said, just, you know, I appreciate you bringing this up and opening the lines of communication about this. Where I was coming from was this place, you know, and just trying to like have a conversation about it really. But sometimes explaining yourself is necessary, you know, but there's a way to do that that sounds less defensive, I think.
I completely agree with you. And I think a lot of that has to do with being in Wise Mind versus Emotion Mind, or at least using opposite action to not sound angry or defensive. Like, tone really matters. Tone really matters.
So one other point that I just want to make. Yeah, there's an example that I'm thinking about of a time that I got feedback from somebody professionally, and I called a friend of mine and was upset about it. And she just reminded me, like, you don't have to value every person's feedback equally. You know, some people's feedback holds more weight than others based on whether you respect them, based on whether they're knowledgeable in the aspect that they're giving you feedback. Also, like, where is the feedback coming from? Is it coming from a place of maybe jealousy or insecurity? Then yeah, maybe that's not as helpful to listen to and to internalize. So keeping that in mind too, like, who's giving the feedback, and do I need to kind of value this equally to other people's feedback?
I think that is so helpful and such a good place, I think, to wrap up this episode. I think, yeah, it's kind of a way to check the facts, you know, when you're removed from the situation, when you're home later that night, you know, maybe ruminating about what happened and wondering if this feedback, you know, makes you a terrible person, and having all, you know, being sort of flooded with those thoughts. You can remind yourself, like, yeah, okay, was there a kernel of truth here? Is there something I can take away from this that might help me in the future? If there is, great. Let me take that. And then maybe I can just kind of brush this off because maybe beyond that one kernel of truth, like this doesn't actually need to impact me that much because, as you said, this person's feedback doesn't hold a lot of weight for me, and I can take what I can from this and then move on with my life.
Yep.
And use other skills to calm down, you know, if that's needed.
Exactly. Yep. Like, take what's useful to you and leave the rest, and be discerning.
Yeah.
So, yes. Well, it has been, I'm glad that we did this episode. I feel like this is, you know, hopefully this was helpful to you, of us using our many times of responding to feedback ineffectively and then through repeated exposure, you know, to respond more effectively. I hope this was helpful to you. So, for the next month, we hope you stay skillful, everyone.